Side 12, The Boat of a Million Years by Paul Anderson, continuing on page 347. He leaned forward, elbows on table. In short, he finished, if we want to stay concealed, we'll have to do a total job of it, abandon everything as fast as possible, permanently, including this ranch. Tomek brought Sean and Asagao over and installed them here. Somebody will come around to ask some questions. He'll probably hear gossip about those visitors you had so soon after the suspicious events. Once he gets descriptions of them, that's all she wrote. Ayat's voice trembled a little. She could walk by now, within limits, and color was back in her face, but it would be a few weeks yet before her full recovery, in body or spirit. Then we can't go. We have to give up, or else be poor again, homeless. No. Hanno smiled. Have you forgotten what I've told you, or don't you believe me? He answered. I've squirreled money and other reserves away around a large part of the world for close to 100 years. I have places to live, excellent cover stories, all details taken care of. Yes, periodically checked and updated. We can disperse or we can go live together as we individually choose, but we'll be comfortable for at least the next 50 years, if this civilization lasts that long, and well prepared if it doesn't. Meanwhile, we can be laying the foundations of fresh careers. Are you sure? I know considerable about this myself, Wanderer said. I am sure. If you're afraid, Aliat, why did you let us boost you out of that bed? Her eyes flickered. I was dazed, didn't know what to think, hardly could think. I had an idea of buying time. That was my notion, too, Wanderer told the group. I kept my mouth shut like her. But today we must be honest. Despite their comradeship, Hanno was jolted. Huh? He exclaimed. You mean we should turn ourselves in? Why? The response was grave. If nothing else, I've heard Sam Giannotti on the subject. Once the world knows immortality is possible, they should be able to give it to everybody inside of 10 years, 20. Molecular biology's already far along. Have we the right to sit on the knowledge? How many millions or billions would we condemn to unnecessary death? Hanno sensed the undertone and pounced. You don't sound too convinced. Wanderer grimaced like a man in pain. I'm not. I had to spell the issue out, but could Earth survive? He waved at the living land around them. How long before this would be under concrete, or polluted into an open sewer? Humans are already swamping in their own numbers. I wonder if it's possible to escape the big dieback, or the extinction. We could hasten that day a lot. They'd practice birth control when they didn't need children to carry on for them, Makandal said. How many would? Svoboda challenged. Nor could the serum reach everybody at once. I foresee riots, revolutions, terror. Must it be that bad? Dushan asked. People will know what to expect before it happens. They can prepare. I do not want to lose what we have here. Nor forsake our children, Asagao added. And what would become of the unity? Makandal put in. She turned to Aliat. You know what it means to you. Think of the whole membership, your brothers and sisters. The Syrian woman bit her lip before responding. We've lost the unity anyway, Corinne. If we came out in public, we couldn't be the same to its people. We wouldn't have time for them either. And the whole world watching. No, the only way for the unity to keep going, anything like what it was, is for us to disappear. If it's as strong as we hope, it'll find new leadership. If not, well, then it wasn't that great after all. So you want to hide, now you know you'll be safe? I didn't say that. I don't expect we'd have much in the way of legal problems. Even Hanno can probably pay fines, and make twice as much off lectures and a book and movie rights and endorsements and everything the biggest celebrities the world'll ever see, short of the second coming. Everything will be offered. Accept peace. Asagao's voice came troubled. No, I fear, Shan, my husband. I fear we would never again have freedom of the soul. Let us make provision for the children, and then let us retire, retreat, and seek for tranquility and virtue. I hate to lose this land, Dushan protested. Aliat's right. You'd be hounded off it regardless, Hanno warned, or taken into protective custody. You've lived sheltered lives, you two. You don't know how many murderous types are out there. Lunatics, fanatics, the insanely jealous, the little snots who'll kill just to get noticed at last. Until immortality was common, I suspect we'd still need a squad of bodyguards around the clock for decades before we got taken for granted. No, let me show you some fresh countryside. He turned to Aliat. That kind of existence may look glamorous to you, my dear, he continued. Riches, high society, fame, fun. Maybe you wouldn't mind the dangers, the need for guards, he chuckled. Provided they're young, handsome, and virile, eh? But please think deeper. How much actual freedom would you have? How much real opportunity? You spoke of finding meaning, purpose in the unity, Svoboda said softly to Aliat and Makandal both. Can we not win to it together, we seven? Can we not work secretly for what is good, and do it better than in a glare of light and storm of noise? Aliat's hand lay on the table. Makandal reached to take it in hers. Of course, if any of us wants to go out and reveal himself or herself, the rest of us have no way of preventing it, Hanno said. We can only ask that you give us time to get well hidden. For my part, I intend to. And I, and whoever goes with me, will not leave behind any clues to our whereabouts. For one thing, I don't want to be around and visible when this country becomes the People's Republic of America. I do not agree that is inevitable, Makandal said. We may be past that stage of history. Maybe. I'll keep my options open. That would stick anybody who wanted to unmask with a problem, Wanderer observed. You've tucked away evidence that you're an immortal, but how could we others prove we weren't lying or crazy? I think we could provide enough indications that the authorities would be willing to wait and see, Makandal said meditatively. Hanno nodded. Also, he admitted, Sam Giannotti, whom I've told you about, he'd doubtless feel released from his vow of silence, and he's a respected man. Might he talk if we all disappeared? Svoboda wondered. No, in that case he'll have nothing to back so wild a story, and better sense than to spread it. He'll be heartbroken, poor decent fellow, but he'll plug on with the research. I'll try to arrange continued funding for the Rufus Lab, mainly for his sake. Do you really mean to liquidate your companies? Makandal asked. You would lose, what, hundreds of millions of dollars? I have plenty hoarded, and I can make more, Hanno assured her. The termination must be done as plausibly as is consistent with speed. Tomek will die and be cremated abroad, in accordance with his wishes. Robert Caldwell, something similar had better happen to him, because unfortunately he's left a potential trail. Joe Levine will get a job offer from an out-of-state firm. Oh, I'll be busy for the rest of this year, but I do have standing preparations for a variety of emergencies, and I expect I can make things fade out in natural-looking ways. There'll be loose ends, inevitably, but then there generally are in ordinary life, and the investigators will leave them dangling once it seems clear they wouldn't lead to anything much. Policemen don't lack for work, you know. Their lot is not a happy one. But you could do so much with the money, she begged. Yes, and with the power we would have, the influence of our fame, in spite of any drawbacks, so much that cries out for doing. Do you feel we are being selfish in wanting to stay hidden? Svoboda queried. Well, do you then want to? Yes. And not for myself or ourselves. I am afraid for the world. Wanderer nodded. Svoboda smiled at him, warmly, though without mirth. You don't quite understand, she said in his direction. You think of nature destroyed, the environment, but I think of humankind. I have seen revolutions, wars, breakdowns, ruin, for 1,000 years. We Russians have learned to fear anarchy above all else. We would rather have tyranny than it. Hanno, you do wrong to look on people's republics, strong governments of every kind, as always evil. Freedom is perhaps better, but chaos is worse. If we let go our secret today, we let loose unforeseeable forces. Religion, politics, economics. Yes, how shall a world of immortals order its economy? 1,000,000 contending dreams and dreads for which men will war around the world. Can civilization itself endure that? Can the planet? Muhammad came out of nowhere, Aliat whispered. And many another prophet, revolutionary, conqueror, Svoboda said. The intentions can be noble, but who foresaw that the idea of democracy in France would bring the reign of terror, Napoleon, and a generation of war? Who foresaw that after Marx and Lenin would come Stalin, and yes, Hitler? The world volcano already smokes and shivers. Put this new thing in it that nobody ever thought of before, and I would hope for a tyranny that can prevent the final explosion. But I wonder if any such rule will be possible. It won't be for lack of trying, Hanno said. He had turned entirely grim. At the bare least, every corrupt politician and fat cat in the West, every totalitarian dictatorship abroad, every dirty little warlord who battens on backwardness, all will jump to screw down their power forever. Yes, death robs us of our loves and finally of ourselves, but death is also good riddance to bad rubbish. Do we dare change that? My friends, being ageless does not make us gods, and most certainly does not make us God. 16. Nearly full, the moon frosted earth with light and dappled it with shadow. Air had gone still, but hour by hour a breath of autumn flowed down from the mountains. Somewhere an owl hooted, hunting. Windows glowed yellow in houses strewn across miles. They seemed almost as remote as the stars. Hanno and Svoboda had driven from town out onto the range to walk alone. The wish was hers. Tomorrow evening, what was ours begins coming to an end, she had said. Can we steal a last few hours of peace? This country is very like the homeland I once had, wide and lonely. Their footfalls crunched on a dirt road. He broke a lengthy silence. You spoke of peace, he said. Voices were small in the vastness. We'll have it again, dear. Yes, we've got a frantic time to go through first, and it'll hurt. But afterward, I believe the whole 7 of us will be glad of the place we're going to. I am sure it is lovely, she replied, and we will be safely away from the world for as long as we need to be. Not forever, remember. In fact, that wouldn't work. We're only gaining another mortal lifetime, the same as so often before. Then we'll have to start fresh under new masks. I know. Until someday, perhaps soon, the scientists find immortality by themselves, and we may as well come forth. Someday, he said, more skeptically than enthusiastically. That is not what I think about, though, Svoboda went on. Now we must think about us, we 7. It will not be easy. We are so different. And 3 men, 4 women. We'll work out our arrangements. For the rest of time, nothing to change, ever. Well, she could hear the reluctance. Of course, none of us can bind the rest. We'll each be free to leave whenever we like. I do hope we'll stay in touch and ready to give help. Isn't freedom the whole of what we're trying to keep? No, I do not feel that is enough, she told him gravely. There must be more. I do not know what it is, not yet. But we must have something beyond survival to live for, or we shall not survive. The future will be too strange. The future always was, he answered from his 3,000 years. What is coming, more strange than ever before? She raised her eyes. Stars gleamed through the moon glow. Golden red Arcturus, blue-white Altair, Polaris of the sailors, Vega, where lately men had found spore of planets. In Odysseus, Hamlet, Anna Karenina, we still see ourselves. But tomorrow, will they know those people, or us? Can we understand them, our children? She caught his left arm. He laid his right hand across hers, for whatever comfort that might give in the night. They had talked of this already a little. Once, while they rested for a day on their long journey from the east, she had guided him in trying to imagine what might happen. Chapter 19. Thule. 1. As it rose out of the darknesses that had severed it from Hanno, his machine self came back to him. Abruptly he was again down in the world that filled his human vision. Clouds towered mountain high. Their nether caverns were full of night and lightning. Their flanks billowed and streamed, streaked with strange tawnies and ochres, where winds beyond all hurricanes roared. Their thunderhead peaks caught sunlight to blaze white against imperial blue. Moment by moment the robot lifted, air thinned, linkage strengthened toward fullness. Hanno felt its haste in his bones, the jet thrust like blood and muscle. It burned, brawled, shouted into the storms that grabbed at it, spurned the monstrous gravity underneath. Heaven deepened to purple, to black and stars. Now he saw with eyes open to every color of light from radio to gamma. He tasted and smelled the changing chemistries until they thinned away and radiation sharpened. Sound likewise died when the ion drive kindled that was barely a thrum, less in his awareness than the flows of mathematics by which the robot guided itself to rendezvous with his ship. Throughout he was also a man looking forth, afloat in silence. At synchronous orbit distance he must turn his head a little if he would look from edge to edge of Jupiter. The king planet was at present half-daylit. Intricacies wove along the frontiers of belts and zones. The effect was of pallid serenity. Deceptive, how well he knew. He had been there. After a fashion. No worthwhile transmission could be made from the lower atmosphere. He would never experience yonder world ocean. He would watch reconstructions and replays of what the robot had known through robotic senses, unless he ordered the data downloaded into his brain, and that would not be the exploration, but merely the borrowed memory of a machine. People on Earth had wondered why he went to so much trouble, and yes, risk, for so small and scientifically valueless an accomplishment. He had refrained from arguing, simply replied that he wanted to do this. Having arranged suitable precautions, for a torch craft mishandled could work more havoc than most ancient wars, the authorities let him. After all, he was the oldest man in existence. One must expect him to keep archaic urges. They never heard him say, "Trial run." The robot closed in. Hanno broke contact and uncoupled from the neuro-induction unit. Docking maneuvers would be both tedious and confusing to a human intellect. Masses moved readily enough, but the right phase-in was essential, lest the dance of electromagnetic fields around the ship be perturbed. Let it falter for 1 second, and the ambient radiation would end the life that began in the early Iron Age. As always, for a span, he felt stunned. The robot's input had been so much greater than anything unaided flesh and blood could ever perceive. Still more had been his partnership, slight though it was, with the computer. Bereft of it, he seemed witless. The longing receded. He was again Hanno, a man with a man's unique part to play. Few on Earth understood that any longer. They thought they did, and in a way they were right, but they did not think like him. He made his preparations. When the ship told him all clear, he was ready. Obedient to his orders, it calculated the vectors of an optimum course for his next goal. Well aft of him, matter met antimatter and energy flamed. Weight came back. Jupiter drifted across the view field until the forward screen held only stars. Under a 1G boost, the time between planets was measured in days. He did not have the total freedom of them. Certain regions were lethal, even within his kind of shielding, such as the neighborhood of the sun. Certain were forbidden him, and rightly so. While he could pass near enough to the web to admire its spidery vastness through his optical systems, a close approach could trouble some part of its functioning, garble the information it drank in from the universe. Subtlest, most enigmatic, was the scent of beings somewhere yonder in the galaxy. Never mind. He was no passive passenger. Within the broad limits of law and its capability, the ship would do whatever he wanted. Recycling molecules and patterns tried and true, or ingeniously new, it provided every necessity, most comforts, many luxuries. Almost the entire culture of the human race was in its data bank, immediately available for his use or pleasure. That included minds for him to summon up when he desired to converse. Living bodies besides his own, he forewent. This was a trial run, the ship well nigh minimal. He expected his tour of the solar system would take a year or two, maybe three if he got really fascinated. That was hardly a blink of time. Nevertheless, already impatience quivered in him. 2. From the height where it nestled, the shop overlooked the great valley of the Appalachians. Forest covered the land below, multitudinously green, a ripple with wind. Slender spear shafts rose from among the trees, hundreds of meters tall, hundreds in number, each bearing a crown. Far down and across, made hazy by remoteness, the woods gave way to an immensity of lawns. There, towers and lower buildings stood widely spaced. Iridescence played over their fantastical shapes. Dushan knew the elven country for an illusion. He had seen the various, always precise forms of those trees close up. They lived not to leaf, flower, and fruit, but to grow materials that no natural plant ever made. The park held not factories, a technocomplex where another kind of growth went on, atom by atom, under the control of giant molecules, tended by machines and overseen by computer, wombs of engines and vessels and other things, once made by hands wielding tools. The shafts were rectennas, receiving solar energy beamed as microwaves from collector stations on the moon. He spied it overhead, a wan crescent nearly lost in the blue, and remembered that overhead was also an illusion. Once men sought enlightenment, escape from the mirage that is the world. Today they held that the phantasm was all there was. Dushan trudged down the knob of rock where the air cab had found a spot to let him out. The shop was a pleasant sight before him, a house in antique style, timber walls and shake roof. Several pines reared behind it. The wind brought their sun-warmed fragrance to him. He knew it wasn't actually a shop. Barden usually prepared his electronic displays here because this was where he lived more than anywhere else. However, express service took them to his customers, who were scattered across the globe. He had seen the cab descend and waited on his porch. "Well, howdy," he called. "Haven't heard from you in quite a spell." After a pause, "Gol durn 5 years, I bet. Maybe more. Time sure flies, don't it?" Dushan kept still until he reached the other man. He wanted to study him. Barden had changed. He remained tall and lanky, but he had discarded shirt and trousers in favor of a fashionable, scintillant gown. His hair was dressed into ram's horn curves. When he smiled, his mouth glittered. Yes, he too had decided it was unattractive to regrow outworn teeth every century or so, and gotten the cells in his jaws modified to produce diamond. His handshake was the same as before. "What have you been up to, friend?" A trace of mountaineer drawl lingered. Perhaps he cultivated it. The past kept some small glamour. Not respect. How could anyone revere old age when everyone was perpetually young? "I tried farming," Dushan said. "What? Hey, come in, and we'll have a drink. Man, it is good to see you again." Dushan noticed how Barden avoided noticing the box he carried. Most furniture he recognized, but otherwise the interior of the house had become rather stark. It held no trace of wares, nor of a woman. That made for a sense of emptiness, when Anse and June Varden had been together for as long as he had known them. But Dushan felt shy of inquiring. He took a chair. His host splashed whiskey into glasses, that at least was a constant, and settled down facing him. "You farmed, you say?" Varden asked. "What do you mean?" "I sought independence." Dushan groped for words. He despised self-pity. "This modern world, I am not at home here. I spent all the basic share I had, together with my savings, and pledged the rest to buy some hectares in Yunnan that nobody else wanted very much. And animals, and—" Varden stared. "You went clear back to subsistence farming?" Dushan smiled lopsidedly. "Not quite. I knew that was impossible. I meant to trade what I did not eat for things I needed and could not make myself. I thought homegrown produce would have a novelty value. But no, it became a hard and bitter existence, and the world crowded in anyhow. At last they wanted my land for a recreation lodge. I did not ask what kind. I was glad, then, to sell for a tiny profit." Varden shook his head. "You were lucky. You should have talked with me first. I would have warned you. If your food fad caught on, Nanotech would duplicate it exactly and undersell you. But chances were it couldn't succeed in the first place. The computers dream up novelties of every kind faster than people can consume them, or even hear about them. Well, I spent most of my life in a simpler world than yours," Dushan sighed. "I made my mistake. I have learned my lesson. Now I have made more things for you." He gestured at the box which rested on his lap. "An elephant, a lotus pattern, and the 8 immortals carved in ivory." Tank-grown ivory, but formed by hand, using traditional tools. Varden winced, tossed off a mouthful of whiskey, braced himself. "I'm sorry. You should have stayed in touch. I closed down that business 3 years ago." Dushan sat mute. "I don't think anybody else is handling stuff like this anymore, either." Varden slogged ahead. "The value is gone. It's not because they can grow perfect copies. Of course they can. The certification that it's an original in a historic style, that made the difference. Till people stopped caring." He hurried on into the silence. "They aren't oafs. We haven't turned into a race of featherheads, whatever you may be thinking. It's just that, well, after you've got a few such items, do you want to spend the rest of eternity acquiring more? Especially when the computers keep generating whole new concepts of art." "I see," Dushan said. The words fell dull. "We, the survivors, we have told and done everything that we had in us." "Well, what do you do these days, Anse?" "Different things," Varden answered, relieved. "Like you and your friends should." "What are yours?" "Well, I'm looking around. Haven't found any promising line of work yet, but... oh, we've got our lives to develop, don't we? Me, I think I might go into Pioneer Land for a while." Varden brightened. "You should try something like that, an Asian networking, maybe. You'd have a lot to contribute with your background." Dushan shook his head. "Thank you, no." "Really, you don't just lie around in an electronic dream. You give input to the network, to everybody else linked with you. You come out with memories the same as though you'd lived it in the flesh." Illusion twice over, Dushan thought. "Are you scared you won't be earning anything meanwhile?" persisted Varden. "Don't worry. You told me you recovered your losses on the farm. Basic share will be plenty for you while you're in retreat. Why, you should come out refreshed, full of ideas for new enterprises." "You may," Dushan mumbled. "I would not." He stared down at his hands where they lay on the box, his big, useless hands. 3. Fiera, who had been Raphael, formed a slow smile. "Oh, yes," she purred. "I do enjoy being a woman." "Will you always be?" asked Aliette. And inwardly, did he always want this down underneath, even when we were making love? Half a cry. "You were such a fine lover, Ray. Strong, sweet, knowing. Did you understand how it hurt when you told me you were going to get yourself remade?" The beautiful head shook. Tresses, naturally violet, rippled over shoulders. "I think not. Long enough to explore it, however long that may be. Afterward, we'll see. By then they expect to have non-human modifications perfected." Fiera stroked fingers down her flanks. "Half otter or dolphin or snake. But that's for later, much later. I imagine first I'll be some kind of man again." "Some kind," escaped Aliette. Fiera raised her brows. "You are dismayed, are you not? Poor dear, is that why I've had no word or sign of you in all this time?" "No, I... well..." Aliette looked away from the image that seemed wholly solid. "I was..." She forced herself to meet the golden gaze. "I thought you didn't care about me any more." "But I told you I did. Believe me, I was sincere. I still care. Why else would I finally have taken the initiative?" Hands reached out. "Aliette, darling, come to me. Or let me come to you." "For what? Now?" Fiera stiffened the least bit. Some warmth dropped from her tone. "We'll find out, won't we? Don't tell me you're shocked. Or was I wrong? I thought you were by far the most open-minded of the survivors." Aliette swallowed. "It isn't that. I'm not inhibited. It's only..." "No. It isn't only. You've changed everything. Nothing could be what it was." "Certainly not. That's the whole idea," Fiera laughed. "Suppose you turn male. We should find that interesting. Not unique, but special. Piquant." "No." Fiera sat a minute silent. When she spoke, she had gone earnest. "You're like the rest of your kind, after all. Or perhaps worse. I gather most of them make some effort to cope. You, though, you accept." Suddenly I realized that's what fooled me. "You never railed against the world. You agreed it was bound to evolve onward. But under that surface you've stayed what you were. A primitive, a leftover from the age of mortality." Aliette's defiance guttered out. She slumped. The sensuousness of the seat reshaping itself as she did was lost on her. "No doubt you're right." Fiera smiled anew, this time sweetly. "You aren't condemned to that, you know. The whole organism is pliable, including the brain. You can have your psyche altered." "Long-drawn, expensive. Actually, I couldn't afford a simple sex change." "Simple," flickered through Aliette. "I remember when they faked it with surgery and hormone shots. Today they cause organs, glands, muscles, bones, everything to grow into something else. If I became a genuine man, what would I think like?" "Haven't you understood modern economics yet? All goods and most services, all services a machine can give, are as abundant as the air we breathe, or could be if there were any reason. Share is simply the easiest means of... oh, keeping track, coordinating what people do. And yes, allocating resources that are limited. Land, for instance. If you genuinely need liberation from your misery, arrangements can be made. I'll help you make them." Again the image extended its arms. "Dearest, let me." Aliette straightened. The tears that she swallowed burned in her throat. "Dearest, you say. What do you mean by that?" Taken aback, Fiera hesitated before replying slowly. "I'm fond of you. I want your company available to me. I want your welfare." Aliette nodded. "What love amounts to these days, affection because of enjoyment." Flora bit her lip. "There you are, mired in the past. when the family was the unit for breeding, production, defense, and its members must needs find ways not to feel trapped. You can't imagine the modern range of emotions. You refuse to try. She shrugged. Odd, considering the life you led then. But I suppose you nursed an unconscious longing for security. What passed for security in those nightmare societies? Aliat recalled explaining to Raphael what a nightmare was. How selfish were your feelings about me? Fiera demanded. Anger cracked a whip. Don't flatter yourself, Aliat said. I'll admit I was infatuated, but I knew that'd end. I did hope it would turn into something that would last. Not exclusive, no, but something real. All right, I've learned better. I had that hope, too, Fiera cried. She sank back into her own seat. Once more she fell silent, thoughtful. Aliat's gaze went off in search of refuge. She occupied a single room on the fourth sublevel of the fountains. Technology would never synthesize space. It seldom felt cramped when the walls formed facilities on command and otherwise provided any scenes she wanted. Earlier today, rather than a contemporary view, she had raised medieval Constantinople. Maybe that was due a nostalgia she knew was unjustified. Maybe it was an attempt at getting back self-esteem. She'd been a principal consultant to the developers of the simulacrum. Hagia Sophia soared above swarming, jostling humanity. Odors of smoke, sweat, dung, roasting food, tar, sea livened the air. It moved, a salt breeze off the horn. When Fiera's visicall came, Aliat had stopped the sound but kept the vision. She could virtually hear wheels, hoofs, feet, raucous voices, snatches of plangent music. Those ghosts were as alive as the ghost that confronted her. Finally, Fiera said, I believe I know what drew you to me, what held you after the first casual attraction. I was interested in you. I didn't take you for granted. You eight were a sensation once you came into the open, but by now most people were born later than that. You're simply here, getting along on share, or on what occasional special job somebody happens to want done. Fewer and fewer of those, aren't there? But I, to me, you were a bit intriguing. I'm not sure why. Aliat thought she heard her suppress whatever pain she had permitted before she went on. I'll be honest. I used you up. I found nothing further to discover. But then, I'd used myself up. I had to change. It was my escape from boredom and futility. Now we can find freshness in each other again, if you wish. Only for a while, though, a short while, until I've become used to perceiving you with a female mind and senses. Unless you change, too. How, I can't tell you. At best, I can offer a suggestion or two. The choice must be yours. If you refuse, if you stay in your narrow existence with your fossil soul, you'll be more and more isolated. You'll find less and less meaning in anything, and at last you'll choose death because it is not that lonely. Aliat drew the ancient air into her lungs. I kept going this long, she said. I'm not about to give up. I'm glad to hear that. I expected it of you, but think, my dear, think. Meanwhile, best I go. Yes, Aliat said. The image vanished. After some minutes, Aliat rose. She stalked the floor. It yielded slightly, deliciously, to her feet. Byzantium surged around her. Blank that scene, she snapped. Pastel blue succeeded it. Delivery service. A panel came into existence, ready to open an orifice. What do I want? A happy pill? Chemistry tailored to me, harmless, instant cheerfulness, head quite clear, probably more clear than it is at this moment. In the bad old days we got drunk or smoked dope, abused our bodies and our brains. Now science has mapped how feelings work, and everybody is sane every hour of the 24. Everybody who decides to be. Hanno, Wanderer, Sean, Patulcius, Where are you? Or, never mind sex. That's an old-fashioned consolation, isn't it? Corinne, Asagao, Svoboda, whatever you're calling yourselves, a name's become as changeable as a garment. Where are you? Which of you can come to me, or I to you? We had our fellowship after we got together. We were the only immortals in the middle of each other's universe while time blew by outside like the wind. But since we came forth, we've drifted apart. We meet by accident and seldom. We say hello and try to talk and feel relieved when it ends. Where are my brothers, my sisters, my loves? 4. While he flew, communications verified that Wanderer was the person he claimed to be and had a permit to visit the control reserve. His car landed as directed in a parking lot outside town, and he emerged, suitcase in hand. Many everyday things, such as clothes, were not spot-produced here. He had reached not exactly a hermit community, not a settlement of eccentrics trying to recreate a past that never was, but a society that went its own way and held much of the world at arm's length. The lot was near the water's edge. Weather Service maintained the original Pacific Northwest climate as closely as was feasible. Clouds hung heavy. Mist swirled on the bay, making vague the rocks that towered from the waves, mysterious like a Chinese painting. The conifer forest stood mighty behind the village, its darkness hardly relieved by splashes of bracken. Yet this was all alive, in silver, gray, white, black, greens, deep or bright, and a sparkle with remnant raindrops. Surf boomed and whispered. Seals barked hoarsely. Gulls hovered and dipped and mewed. Breath went cool, moist, tangy through nostrils to blood. A man waited. Clad in plain shirt and work pants, he was stocky and brown-skinned. Not many whites among his ancestors, Wanderer decided. What had they been, then? Maka? Quinault? No difference. Tribes were hardly even names anymore. Hello, Mr. Wanderer. There was an anachronism for you. The man extended his hand. Wanderer took it, felt calluses and sturdiness. Welcome. I'm Charlie Davison. Wanderer had practiced old-time American English before he left Jalisco. Glad to meet you. I didn't expect this. Figured I'd get acquainted on my own. Well, we talked it over in the council and decided this was better. You're not just another Jacko. That must be local slang for the few hundred outsiders a year allowed to experience the wilderness. It sounded mildly contemptuous. Nor a scientist or official agent, are you? No. Come on, I'll see you to the hotel, and later I'll sort of introduce you around. They started off. Soon they were on an unpaved road where puddles glimmered. Because you're a survivor. Wanderer's smile twitched rueful. I didn't want to advertise that right away. We ran a routine check before agreeing you could come. Same as we do for everybody. You eight may go pretty much unnoticed, but you sure were famous once. Your background popped right out of the scan. Word got around. I hate to say this, nothing personal, but you'll find some folks here who resent you. That was an ugly surprise. Really? Why? You survivors can have children whenever you like. I see. Wanderer considered how to respond. Gravel scrunched underfoot. Jealousy isn't reasonable, though. We're freaks of nature, a crazy combination of genes, including several unlikely mutations, that doesn't breed true. Normal human beings who don't want to age have to undergo the process. Well, we can't then let them reproduce freely. Remember your history, population explosion, the Great Death, and that was before Athanatics. I know, Davison sounded a bit miffed. Who doesn't? Sorry, but I have met quite a few who don't. They think history's too depressing to study. I point out to them that they'll have their chance to be parents eventually. There are accidental losses to make up, and interplanetary colonies may yet be founded. Yeah, the waiting list for children was several centuries long last time I looked. Uh-huh. But as for us survivors, ever hear of a grandfather clause? By revealing ourselves, we opened up a treasure trove for scholars. Fair is fair. As a matter of fact, we hardly ever do become parents. We hardly ever have partners who are eligible, and any offspring we have grew too soon alien. I understand all that, Davison said. I don't object myself. I'm only telling you we'd better be, tactful. That's a reason why I met you. I do appreciate it. Wanderer attempted to drive his point home. You might remind those objectors to my status that they can beget kids every bit as lawfully, no limit, because they're willing to shrivel and die in 100 years or less. That's the bargain. They can drop out whenever they choose, get youth restored if they've lost it, join the immortals. There is simply that small, necessary price to pay. Sure, 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 Davison snapped. Think we've never heard? After half a dozen strides. My turn to say sorry. I didn't mean to sound mad. To most of us, you'll be very welcome. What yarns you have to spin! Nothing you can't play off the databank, I'm afraid, Wanderer said. We were questioned and interviewed dry many years ago. Generations before you were born, Charlie, if your lineage is purely mortal. How old are you? 40, 50? I see white sewn through your hair and crow's feet at your eyes. Not the same, Davison answered. Good Lord, I'm in company with a man who knew Sitting Bull. Actually, Wanderer had not, but he let it pass. Hearing it from you in person means so much more. Don't you forget our whole idea is to live naturally, like God intended. That's why I've come. Davison's pace faltered. He stared. What? We supposed you were interested. Like the rest of our visitors. I am, of course. But more than that, I guess we'd better not mention this immediately. However, I think I might settle here if people will have me. You? Asked amazement. I go way back, you know, to the tribes, the brotherhoods, rites and beliefs and traditions, living by our wits and hands, off the land and of the land. Oh, I'm not romantic about it. I remember the drawbacks too clearly, and would certainly not want to revive, say, the horse barbarians. But still, damn it, we had a oneness with our world such as doesn't exist now, except maybe among you. They were entering the village. Boats rocked at the wharf. Men fished for the local market. Kitchen gardens and apple trees burgeoned behind neatly made wooden houses. Mere supplements, Wanderer must remind himself, like their handicrafts. The dwellers spend share and order stuff delivered, same as the rest of us. For added earnings, some of them take care of these woods and waters, or they attend to the tourists, or they do brain work out of their homes over the computer net. They haven't disowned the modern world. He thrust away memories of what he had witnessed elsewhere around the planet, the death slow or swift, always anguished, that overtook obsolete communities and ways of life, the ghost towns, empty campsites, forsaken graves. Instead, he searched about him for the secret of this folk's endurance. Those on the street were a mingled lot, every race of mankind, together in their faith, wish, and fear. A church, tallest of their buildings, lifted its steeple cloudward. The cross on top declared that life eternal was not of the flesh, but of the soul. Children were the desire, the reward. When and where else had Wanderer last seen a small hand clutching mother's, a round face turned his way to marvel? Calm gray heads bore the sense of having staved off dehumanization. They recognized the newcomer. Word had indeed gotten about. None crowded close. Their greetings to Davison were self-conscious, and Wanderer felt the looks, heard the buzz at his back. Not that the atmosphere was hostile. Doubtless only a minority begrudged him his privilege, as nearly meaningless as it was. Most seemed as if they looked forward to knowing him, and were simply too polite to introduce themselves at once. Or else, since they were few and close-knit, it had been agreed they wouldn't. adolescents instantly lost the sullenness that hung on them. That last struck Wanderer first as peculiar, then as disturbing. He paid closer attention. The elderly were a bare handful. Drawn shades and neglected yards showed what houses stood vacant. "Well, you begin by relaxing and enjoying yourself," Davison advised. "Take the tours. Meet the Jackos. They're okay. We screen 'em pretty carefully. How about dinner at my place tomorrow? My wife's anxious to meet you, too. The kids are starry-eyed. And we'll invite 2-3 other couples that I think you'll like." "You're awfully kind." "Oh, I'll benefit. And Martha and—" The hotel was ahead, a rambling structure whose antiquarian veranda looked over the bay and the sea beyond. Davison slowed his gait and lowered his voice. "Listen, we don't just want to hear stories from you. We want to ask about the tales, the kind that don't get in the news or the data bank, the kind we don't notice ourselves when we go outside because we don't know what to watch for." The chill deepened in Wanderer. "You mean you wish I'd explain how life there feels to me, to a person who didn't grow up in those ways?" "Yes, that's it, if you please. I realize I'm asking a lot, but, well, I'll try," Wanderer said. Unspoken, "You're giving serious thought to moving away, Charlie, to renouncing this whole existence and creed and purpose." "I knew the Enclave is shrinking, that its children usually leave soon after they reach legal adulthood, that recruits have become vanishingly scarce. I knew it's as doomed as the Shakers were in their day, but your middle-aged are also quitting, so quietly that the fact wasn't in what I studied about you. I'd hoped for a mortal lifetime or two of peace, of belonging. Set that aside, Wanderer." Guests were clustered on the porch. They pointed and jabbered. He stopped and turned to see. Barely visible through the haze, three giant shapes slipped past the mouth of the bay. "Whales," Davison told him. "They're multiplying fine. We spot more every year." "I know," said Wanderer. "Right whales, those. I remember when they were declared extinct." I wept. They were recreated in the laboratories, reintroduced to a nature that is completely managed. This is no wilderness other than in name. It's a control reserve, a standard of comparison for ecological service to use. No true wilderness is left, anywhere on earth, unless in the human heart, and there, too, the intellect knows how to govern. I shouldn't have come here. Now I'll have to stay a week or so for courtesy's sake, for the sake of this man and his kin, but I should have known better than to come. I should be stronger than to let this hurt me so. 5. Nowhere was Yukiko ever alone with the stars. Solitude she could have, yes. The powers, and mostly the people, were gracious to survivors. She often thought that graciousness had become the common and principal virtue of humanity. It led to an impersonal kindliness. Unhindered room was the sole good in which the world was impoverished. Nevertheless, when she expressed her longing, this atoll became hers. Minuscule though it be, that was an Aladdin's gift. Yet the stars were denied her. A few blinked wan after dark. Sirius, Canopus, Alpha Centauri, sometimes others, together with Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn. Their constellations lost in the nacreous luminance. She was rarely sure which she saw. Satellites twinkled swift across heaven. The moon shone mistily, and on its dark part she made out steady sparks, the light of technocomplexes and the triple city. Aircraft went in firefly swarms. Occasionally a spacecraft passed, majestic meteor, and thunders rolled from horizon to horizon, but that was seldom, most operations being off-Earth and robotic. She had resigned herself to the loss. Weather control, atmosphere maintenance, massive energy transfers were necessary. They caused fluorescence. That was that. She could fill the walls and ceiling of her house with a starscape as grand as if she stood in an Arizona desert before Columbus, or she could visit a sensorium and know naked space. Still, ungratefully, when she was outdoors in this her refuge, she wished she didn't have to conjure the night sky out of memories. The ocean murmured. Reflection sheened off much of it, where aquaculture did not blanket the waves. Brightnesses bobbed yonder, boats, ships, a barge town plodding along. Surf made white unrest beyond the lagoon, which was a well of sky glow. The noise felt hushed, less loud than coral gritting beneath her feet. Her lungs drank cool purity. Each day she wordlessly thanked untold gigabillions of microorganisms for keeping the planet clean. That humans, computers, had designed and produced them to do it made no difference. Theirs was a wonderful karma. She passed by her garden, dwarf trees, bamboo, stones, twining paths. A machine was noiselessly busy there, newly returned from Australia, where she had found herself involved in one more fleeting affair. She hadn't thus far taken over that work again. Well, she wasn't very gifted for it. If only Dushan. But he didn't like these surroundings. Her house lay shadowy, a small and subtle blending of curves. Her worldlet, she was apt to think. It provided, or had brought to her, everything she needed, and more. Self-repairing, it could do so for as long as the energy arrived. Now and then she wished it would make sense for her to take a dusting cloth in her hand. And I was once a lady of the court, she thought. Wryness tugged her lips upward. Dismissed those feelings. She had gone to sit by the sea and empty her mind, open her soul, until she felt ready to use her intelligence. Whatever harmony she had won to was fragile. A wall opened for her. Light bloomed within. The room was furnished in ascetic ancient style. She knelt on a straw mat before the computer terminal and raised the electronic spirit. A portion of that immense rationality identified her and spoke in suitable musical language and phrases. "What is your desire, my lady?" No, not really suitable. Desire was the snare. She had even forsaken her old name of morning glory and become, once again, after a thousand years, small snow, as a sign to herself of renunciation. But that, too, had failed. I have meditated on what you told me about life and intelligence among the stars, and decided to learn as much of this as I am able. Teach me. It is a matter complex and chaotic, my lady. As far as the exploratory robots have taken our knowledge, life is rare, and only three unmistakably sentient species are known, all technologically in an equivalent of the human Paleolithic era. Three others are controversial. Their behavior may be elaborately instinctive, or it may arise in minds too unlike the terrestrial to be recognizable as such. Whatever they are, these creatures too possess only simple implements. On the other hand, the web has detected anomalous radiation sources at greater distances, which may mean high-energy civilizations analogous to ours. Depending on how the data are interpreted, they may number as many as 752. The nearest is at an estimated remove of 475 parsecs. Additionally, the web is receiving signals that are almost certainly informational from 23 different sources, identified with bodies or regions that are astrophysically unusual. We doubt that these signals are directed at us especially. We do not know whether any transmitters are in direct contact with each other. There are indications that they use distinct codes. Data thus far are insufficient for more than the most tentative and fragmentary suggestions of possible meaning. I know. Everybody does. You've told me already. And it was unnecessary then. Yukiko fought down irritation. The machine was godlike in its power. It could do a million years' worth of human reasoning in a day, but it had no right to patronize her. It didn't intend to. It habitually repeated itself to humans because many of them needed that. She eased, let the emotions surge and die like a wave. "Calm," she said. "As I understand it, the messages are not about mathematics or physics. They do not appear to be, and it seems implausible that civilizations would spend time and bandwidth exchanging knowledge that all must certainly possess. Perhaps they concern other sciences, such as biology. However, that implies that our understanding of physics is incomplete, that we have not by now delineated every possible kind of biochemistry in the universe. We have no evidence for such an assumption.
I know, Yukiko repeated, but patiently. And I've heard the argument that it can't be politics or anything like that, when transmission times are in centuries.
Do they compare histories, arts, philosophies?
Conceivably.
I believe that. It makes sense. Unless organic life withers away. But won't machine minds also wonder about the ultimate? I want to master your analysis. I'm aware I can't make any contribution, nothing original. Let me follow along, though. Give me the means to think about what you have learned and are learning.
That could be done within limits, said the gentle voice.
It would require much time and effort on your part. Do you care to explain your reasons?
Yukiko couldn't help it. Her words trembled.
Those beings, they must be advanced far beyond us.
Not likely, my lady.
To the best of present-day knowledge, and it appears seamless, nature sets bounds on technological possibilities, and we have determined what those bounds are.
I don't mean in engineering. I mean in understanding, enlightenment.
Inner peace was gone. Her pulse stammered. You don't see what I'm talking about. Would anybody nowadays, any human being?
Except Dushan, and perhaps if they tried, the rest of our fellowship. We hark back to when people felt these questions were real.
Your purpose is clear, said the electronics mildly. Your concept is not absurd. Quantum mechanics fails at such levels of complexity. Mathematically speaking, chaos sets in, and one must make empirical observations.
Yes, yes, we must learn the language and listen to them.
Did she hear regret within the inexorability? The system could optimize its reactions for her.
My lady, what information we have is totally inadequate. The mathematics leaves no doubt. Unless the character of what we receive changes in fundamental ways, we shall never be able to interpret it for any such subtleties. Be warned, if that is what interests you, studying the material will be an utter waste of your time.
She had not dared lift hopes too high, but this smashed down upon her.
Instead, wait, counseled the system. Remember, our robotic explorers travel at virtual light speed. They should begin arriving at the nearer sources to observe and interact in about a millennium. Perhaps 15 centuries after that, we will begin to hear from them and truly begin to learn. You are immortal, my lady.
Wait.
She smothered tears. I am not a saint. I cannot endure that long while existence has no meaning.
6. Suddenly, warningless, the rock gave way under Thurston's boots. For an instant he seemed frozen, arms flung wide against an infinity of stars. Then he toppled from sight. Svoboda, second in file, had time to thump her staff down and squeeze the firing button. Gas jetted white from vents as a piton shot into stone. The barrel locked onto the upper part of the shaft. She clung. The mine slammed taut. Even under lunar gravity, that force was brutal. Her soul skidded on a treacherously thin dust layer. Gripping the staff, she kept upright. Violence ended. Silence pressed on the faint cosmic hiss in her earplugs. She had been yanked forward about 2 meters. The line continued upslope and over a verge formed when the ledge they had been following went to pieces. It should have been strained tight by Thurston's weight. She saw with horror that it drooped slack. Had it broken? No, it couldn't have. "Thurston," she cried, "are you all right?"
The wavelength diffracted around the edge. If he hung there, it was only about 1 meter below. She got no response. The seething jibed.
She turned her head more than her body toward him swatty behind her. His belt flash cast a pool of undiffused light at his feet. threw a well-nigh invisible helmet at dazzled her, made him a shadow against the starlit gray of the mountainside. "Come here," she ordered. "Carefully, carefully. Take hold of my staff."
"Yes," he acknowledged.
Though she hadn't been leading the climb, she was the team captain. The expedition was her idea. Moreover, she was a survivor. The others were in their 20s or 30s. Beneath all the informality and fellowship, they bore a certain awe of her.
"Stand by," she said when he reached her. "I'm going ahead to look. If more crumbles, I'll try to spring back, and may well fall off the ledge. Be prepared to break me and hold me up."
"No, I will go," he protested. She dismissed that with a chopping gesture and set off on hands and knees. It was a short crawl, but time stretched while she felt her way forward. On her right, a cliff went nearly sheer into a nightfall abyss. Flexible as skin, tough as armor, her spacesuit wouldn't protect her against such a fall. Vision searched and probed. Sensors in the gloves told her more through her hands than they could have learned naked. At the back of her mind, it annoyed that she should be aware of sweat smells and dry mouth. While the suit recycled air and water, at the moment she was overloading its thermostat and capacity for breaking down waste. The surface held. The ledge continued beyond a 3-meter gap. She made out pockmarks near the break in it. So, she thought, she must not agonize over Thurston, not yet. Once in the past, a shotgun meteoroid shower had struck here. Probably radiation spalling then weakened the stone further, turning that section into an unforeseeable trap. Well, everybody had said this undertaking was crazy. The first lunar circumambulation? To go clear around the moon on foot? Why? You will endure toil and hardship and danger for what? You won't carry out any observations a robot can't do better. You won't gain anything but a fleeting notoriety, largely for your foolishness. Nobody will ever repeat the stunt. There are gaudier thrills to be had in a sensorium, higher achievements among the computers. "Because it is real," was the best retort she found. She came to the edge and put her head over. On the horizon, a sliver of rising sun shone above a crater. It turned desolation into a jumble of light and dark. Her helmet saved her eyesight by immediately stopping the glare down to a dull gold. Elsewhere it stayed clear. Her heart fluttered. Thurston dangled beneath her, limp. She loudened radio reception and heard snoring breath. "He's unconscious," she reported to him, Swati. Examining. "I see what the trouble is. His line caught in a crack on this verge. Impact jammed it in tight." She rose to her knees and tugged. "I can't free it. Come." The young man joined her. She rose. "We don't know how he's injured," she said. "We must be gentle. Secure the end of my line and lower me over the side. I'll clasp him and you haul us both in, me on the bottom to absorb any shocks and scrapes." That went well. Both were strong, and complete with spacesuit and backpack full of intricate chemistries, a person weighed only some 20 kilos. While he was in her arms, Thurston opened his eyes and moaned. They laid him out on the ledge. Waiting till he could speak, Svoboda gazed west. The heights dropped down toward a level darkness that was Mare Crisium. Earth hung low, daylit part, marbled white and blue, unutterably lovely. Memories of what it had once been struck like a knife. Damnation, why did that have to be the one solitary planet fit for humans? Oh, the lunar cities and the inhabited satellites were pleasant, and unique diversions were available there. She was more at home in them than on Earth, actually. Or rather, was less an exile. Their people, such as these her comrades, sometimes thought and felt much as people used to think and feel. Though that, too, was changing. On which account you scarcely ever heard talk about terraforming Mars and Venus any longer. Now, when it could be done, hardly anybody was interested. Well, she and her 7 kin had always known change. Merchant princes and brawling warriors were strangers to petty bourgeoisie and subservient peasants under the czars, who in turn were foreign to 20th-century engineers and cosmonauts. Yet they had all shared most of what they were with each other and with her. How many still did? Thurston brought her from her memories when he gasped, I'm awake, and struggled to sit up. She knelt, urged caution, helped and supported him. Water, he said. The suit swung a tube to his mouth, and he drank greedily. Ah, good. Concern furrowed him Swati's chocolate countenance. How are you? He asked. What happened? How should I know? Clarity and a little vigor returned to Thurston's voice as he talked. Sore in the belly, sharp pains in my lower left chest, especially when I bend or take a deep breath. Earache also. Sounds like a cracked or broken rib, maybe two, Svoboda said. Relief overwhelmed her. He could have been killed, suffered such brain damage that revivification would have been pointless. My guess is that a falling boulder hit you with more force than your suit could withstand. Yes, see? Her finger traced the semblance of a scar. The fabric had been ripped open and promptly closed itself again. Within an hour it would be completely healed. Everything conspired against us, didn't it? We're not going to scale this mountain. No matter. It was hardly more than a whim of ours. Let's get you back down to camp. Thurston insisted he could walk, and managed a gait halfway between a step and a shuffle. We'll call for a vehicle to fetch you, M'Swati said. As if to confirm, a relay satellite flitted across the constellations. The rest of us can finish. It will be easier going from here than it was on Farside. Thurston bridled. No, you don't. I'll not be cheated out of this. Svoboda smiled. Have no worries, she reassured. I'm sure you'll just need a knit patch or two injected, and they can return you to us in 50 hours or so. We'll wait where we are. Frankly, I wouldn't mind slacking off that long. An inner glow. My kind of human is not altogether extinct. Bleakness. How many years can you remain what you are, Thurston? You have no reason to. Do I keep young in spirit, or merely immature? Has our history damned us, the survivors, to linger retarded while our descendants evolve beyond our comprehension? The plateau and camp came in view. Genia ran to meet the party. Someone must stay behind in case of trouble. She had gotten the shelter deployed. More a mothering organism than a tent, it spread beneath the radiation shields that curved like wings from the top of the freight carrier. "Thurston, Thurston," she called. "I was terrified listening in. If we'd lost you." She reached them. All four embraced. For that moment, at least, under the stars, Svoboda was again among beloved friends. 7. "You see," Patulkius strove to explain, "what I have done is what the old Americans would have called worked myself out of a job." The curator of Oxford, who, for reasons unrevealed to him, currently used the name Theta Ennea, lifted her brows. She was comely in a gaunt fashion, but he never doubted that under the plumes growing from her otherwise bare scalp lay a formidable brain. "The record indicates that you served well," she said. "What did she sing? However, why do you suppose you might find occupation here?" Patulkius glanced from her through the glass window of her almost as anachronistic office. Outside, wind-chased sunlight and cloud shadows along High Street. Across it dreamed the beautiful buildings of Magdalen College. Three persons wandered by, looking, occasionally touching. He suspected they were young, though of course you couldn't tell. "This isn't simply a museum," he replied after a moment. "People do live in the town. The preservation of things puts them in special relationships among themselves and to you. I imagine that makes a kind of community. My experience. They must have problems, nothing too serious, but nevertheless problems. Questions of conflicting rights, duties, wants. You must have mediational procedures. Procedures are my strong point." "Can you be more specific?" Theta Ennea asked. Patulkius turned his gaze back to her. "I would first have to know the situation, the nature of the community. Customs and expectations, as well as rules and regulations," he admitted. "I can learn quickly and well," he smiled. "I did for 2,000 years and more." "Ah, yes," Theta Ennea gave back the smile. "Naturally, when you requested an interview, I tapped the databank about you. Fascinating. From Rome of the Caesars through the Byzantine and Ottoman empires, the Turkish Republic, the dynasts, and... Yes, the story is marvelous as it is long. That is why I invited you to come in person.
Ruefully, I too have an outmoded preference for concreteness and immediacy. Therefore I hold this position.
She sighed.
It is not a sinecure. I confess I have not had time to assimilate everything about you.
Patulcius manufactured a chuckle. Frankly, I'm glad of that. I didn't enjoy the burst of fame when we survivors manifested ourselves. Gradually becoming obscure again was pleasant.
Theda Ennea leaned back behind her desk, which was of plain wood, possibly an antique, and bore nothing except a small omniterminal.
If I recall rightly, you joined the other seven quite late.
Patulcius nodded.
After the bureaucratic structure finally and irreversibly collapsed around me. We'd kept in touch, of course, and they made me welcome, but I've never been, intimate with them.
Is that why you made more of an effort than they to become integrated with the modern world?
Patulcius shrugged. Perhaps. I'm not given to self-analysis, or perhaps I just happened to have an opportunity none of them did. My talent, such as it is for... No, administration claims too much. Operations maintenance. The humble but essential chores that keep the social machinery running. Or that used to.
Theda Ennea drooped her lids and regarded him closely before she said, You have done more than that in the past 50 or 100 years.
Conditions were unique. For the first time in a long time, they were such that I was qualified to take a hand in coping. No credit to me. Historical happenstance. I'm being honest with you. But I did gain experience.
Again she pondered. Would you please explain? Give me your interpretation of those conditions.
He blinked, surprised, and spoke hesitantly. I have nothing but banalities.
Well, if you insist.
The advanced countries, no, I should say the high-technology civilization, had gone so far, so fast. It and the societies that had not assimilated the revolution, they became like different species. It had to absorb them. The alternatives were all horrible, but the gap in ways of living, thinking, understanding was huge. I was among the few who could talk, function, more or less effectively, on both sides of that gap. I gave what assistance I could to those poor people, developing suitable organization to get them through the transition. When your people no longer had an old-fashioned, paper-shuffling, purely human bureaucracy, and were not sure how to build one. That is what I did. I did not do it alone by any means, he finished. My apologies for lecturing on the obvious.
It is not absolutely obvious, Theda Ennea said. You speak from a viewpoint that has no counterpart anywhere.
I would like to hear much more. It should help me come nearer empathizing with those scores of generations who made this place what it was. Because I never quite could, you see. With all the curiosity and, yes, all the love in the world, I have never quite been able to feel what they felt.
She rested her arms on the desktop and went on compassionately. But you, Gnaeus Cornelius Patulcius, and the many other names you have borne, in spite of them... In spite of your recent engagements, you also have yet to understand. No, I have no job for you. You should have known as much. Since you did not, how can I explain? You assumed this must be a community in some sense, like those where you were, where the dwellers share certain interests and a certain sense of common identity. I have to tell you, this isn't simple. It isn't ever spelled out. Hardly anybody realizes what is happening, just as hardly anybody in the time of Augustus or of Galileo realized what was happening. But I spend my life trying to fathom the currents of history. Her laugh was forlorn. Pardon me. Let me back up and start over. Except for a few moribund enclaves, community in a general sense has dissolved. We still use the word and go through some of the forms, but they are nearly as empty as a fertility rite or an election would be. Today we are purely individuals. Our loyalties,
if loyalty has any meaning left, are to various and ever-varying configurations of personalities. Has this fact wholly escaped you?
Well, no,
Patulcius floundered, but I can offer you nothing in the way of work, Theta Ennia finished. I doubt anyone anywhere can any longer. However, if you care to stay a while in Oxford, we can talk. I think we might learn something from each other, for whatever help that may be to you afterward, she left unsaid. 8. The world abides. I am still I, bone, blood, and flesh, aware of the induction unit that enwraps me, but also of walls, and their views across the outside, silvery-hued turf, a fountain arcing in fractals, an enormous shell of diamond within which, I have heard, grows a new kind of comet-mining spacecraft, flashes in the sky as a weather-control module implants energy, the allness exterior to me. So quiet is this room that I hear my breath go in and out, my pulse, the rustle of hair when my head moves on the couch. What happens to me is a waxing of interior cognizance until soon it is the outside that is the ghost. I descend into myself. My whole past opens to my ranging. Again I am a slave, a fugitive, a servant, a leader, a companion. Again I love and lose, bear and bury. I lie on a sunlit hillside with my man. The clover smell and buzz of bees are sweet to know. We watch a butterfly pass. It is gone, these 500 years. There are blurs, there are gaps. I am not sure whether lichen grew on yonder stone. Yes, quantum randomness gathers its tax, but slowly. And I can renew what matters, even as my body renews itself. A neuropeptide links to the receptor on a nerve cell. Come, the thought is not mine. It becomes mine. I am conducted. I conduct myself, onward and inward. Thus far went my training. Today I am ready for oneness. I do not go into the network. Nothing moves but those fields, mathematical functions, that the world perceives as forces, particles, light itself. In a sense the network enters me, or it unfolds before me as I before it. My guide takes form. No shape walks beside me, no hand holds mine. Nonetheless I am conscious of the body, though it may lie halfway around the planet, in the way that I am conscious of my own. His person is tall, slender, blue-eyed. His personality is blithe and sensuous. You were once Flora, I learn of you, he thinks to me. Then I will be Faunus. He would like us to meet afterward for purposes of exploration. That is the merest ripple through an intelligence born of a brain made flawless. He has the gift of sympathy, too, that he may help a neophyte such as me begin to partake. Timidly, then warily, then ardently, I mesh the flow of my identity with his. Thereby I more and more know the entire linkage. I have studied in abstraction. Today I am in and of the reality. Currents go like billows, cresting, troughing, weaving new waves. From them spring figures many-patterned and crystalline as snowflakes, brilliancies that expand outward through multiple dimensions, shift, flicker, dance in eternal change. And this is the language and the music that speak to me. Afar, imminent, core, outermost, the great computer sustains the matrices of our beings, vivifies them, sends them on their orbits and summons them home. Yet it is at our behest. We are what happens, the oneness, the God. We. Minds reach forth, touch, join. Here is Phyllis, my human teacher, who first accompanied me along the fringes. I have her self-image, small, dark, long-haired, though in dim wise because she is not thinking about her body. I recognize the gentleness, patience, toughness. Suddenly I can share her interest in tactile harmonics and microgravity laser polo. Her warmth embraces me. And here is Nils. Even without image or name, I would know that laughter. We are good friends. We have sometimes been lovers. Did you truly never want to be more than that, Niels? Do immortality and invulnerability breed fear of permanence? You belong to an age that is dead, my dear. You must free yourself of it. We will aid you. How is it I feel cold here, where space is a fiction and time an inconstant? No, this is not really you, Niels. I haven't sensed your thoughts before, but surely they would not float free of all feeling like these. You are right. I am not in the network. This is my double, the downloaded configuration of my mind. Whenever I rejoin it, I grow the richer by what it has known while I was away. Increasingly, I have found you dull and shallow. I had not the heart to tell you so then, but now there is no more hiding. By his emotion, I know that Faunus, glands, nerves, the whole animal heritage, is physically linked like me. Be of good cheer, Flora. You have boundless choices. Evolve with us. Another mind comes to the forefront of me. It, too, is bodiless, but forever. A certain kindliness glows yet, because memories of loss and sorrow do, no longer felt, yet still, in shadow fashion, understood. To make it bid me behold. He was a physicist who dreamed of discoveries. Already the unification had been achieved, the grand equation written. Defiant, he cherished his hopes. He knew full well how unlikely it was that any law remained unknown, that any experiment would ever again give a result for which the synthesis could not account. End of side 12. Change side selector switch. This book is continued on the next cassette.